Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today has been an AP for 7 years and posts under the name of Hit Ace 7. Hit Ace 7, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, Bob, thank you for having me, and thank you to Richard. It's sort of unreal and surreal at the same time to be here, since you guys are some of my heroes. And I've burned through all of your shows, I remember, a few years back ago, so it's pretty surreal to be here. Thank you. I'm very pleased and very honored.
That's a lot of shows. We're up to almost 500 episodes. So.
Yep, it was a large amount of shows that I took in.
Sounds like a lot of trips to Vegas that he spent listening to shows on the way. Before we talk more to hit Ace 7, Richard, you had something you wanted to talk to the audience about.
Oh, I just wanted to thank people who are posting reviews. It helps the show. So, you know, whatever, whether you listen through iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or whatever, if you post a review, it really helps us, and we appreciate it. And so just thank you, everybody, for doing that.
Does the posting on the gamblingwithanedge.com site help those numbers, or are those separate?
No, those are more comments about the show, so discussion sometimes starts. And you know, that's a little bit weird, because the show is in so many places, discussion starts in different places. It's too bad that it couldn't all be aggregated in one, but you know, sometimes there'll be comments on YouTube and other comments at Gambling with an Edge, and so but there's really not anything we can do about that.
Well, if there's nothing we can do about that, let's talk to Hit Ace 7. Before you became an AP, how did you get started gambling?
Yeah, so I actually played as a ploppy. I played blackjack as a ploppy for, I would say, maybe a year or so, maybe a couple of times that I'd go to either the local casino or I would go to Vegas. And dangerously enough, I was a winner playing as a ploppy. So I thought, like, what is there to learn? I mean, what, you know?
Yeah, this is easy.
I really got it down. Yeah. Thankfully, I was able to discover that if I keep playing, I'm gonna lose. So, that's around the time when I did watch the movie 21. I think that's sort of a gateway into AP play for a lot of card counters. And that's kind of what got me started, to have an interest in blackjack. After that, I came in contact with Colin from Blackjack Apprenticeship. And I kind of just took it from there. But yeah, it was basically being interested in blackjack, realizing that I'm going to lose if I don't do this right, and then finding out that there is a way to beat it. So that's initially how I got started.
How did you come in contact with Colin? How did that happen?
So initially, when I started research about blackjack, I noticed that there was a documentary out there for his team, which is Holy Rollers, and it gives a history about the church team. And initially, I contacted Colin just actually to talk about the Christian faith and playing blackjack. And then from there, I kind of joined the forum, and I kind of learned a lot from his website. But that's initially how I came in contact with Colin, looking for blackjack resources, realizing his team had a documentary, and then just speaking about that.
All right. Now, you have a Latino accent. Do you ever take advantage of it by playing as somebody who doesn't speak English, or playing south of the border?
You better believe it. Yeah. So, I guess there's two things I could mention. One is that, yes, I have played south of the border in a couple of countries, and I do use the fact that I'm a native Spanish speaker to my advantage. When the setting and the time is right, I will pretend that I don't speak English, and use that to my advantage. One of the primary ways in which I did that when I was initially starting my blackjack career, and the MGM properties had the $25 minimum during the weekdays for their double deck soft 17 games. I played those games extensively for quite a while. And what made me realize I could do that is that I would see Spanish speaking tourists betting pretty good money at those properties. And I'm thinking, wow, I think I could take advantage of this if I could blend in as one of them, as a visitor, as a tourist, as somebody doing business here, and basically telling the casino I don't speak much English. So I kind of use that with my foreign passport, and I was able to milk those games. So.
Oh, you have a foreign passport?
Yeah, I have double nationality.
Oh wow, that is a huge advantage to have a non-American passport. That's great.
Yeah, and then I would say a word of caution, because I have suggested to a couple APs that if they are a native speaker of another language and you use that to your advantage, don't be surprised if they bring out a host that speaks your language as a native speaker as well, and that knows the area you claim to be from. So you got to talk shop. You know, if somebody goes out there and starts talking to you and they realize you don't know what you're talking about, that could be a red flag for them, you know. So that did happen to me, and obviously I was able to talk to them with no problem. So just a word of caution.
So can you let's go back to the beginning. When you first contacted Colin, then did you learn to count cards off the website? Did you buy any particular books? And what was your bankroll to start once you actually became competent?
Yeah, so initially when I joined Blackjack Apprenticeship, I had already started to learn how to count cards using just a simple app that I purchased from the App Store. And that kind of got me to a level where I was comfortable keeping a running count. And then joining the website, then I was able to run the drills and become more proficient in the rest of the techniques, not only running count, but true count, and then match that to what betting I should be doing according to what count. So the interesting about my bankroll, I actually do what is referred to as a replenishable bankroll, which means I have another source of income, which I have a full-time gig, and I'm not a full-time AP. So my approach to those listening is, you know, not everybody who does advantage play must be a full-time AP. And I'm not. That's my approach. Nevertheless, over the years, I started with a $5,000 replenishable bankroll, playing red chips and into a little bit of green chips. And as I got more comfortable, I've increased that over the years to where now I play with either like a $30,000 or $35,000 replenishable bankroll. And what I do that is, if I have a losing streak, within a month or two, I'll replenish that. And my goal is to always have that on hand. I have that here at the house, and I will use it to play. And if I do win, then, you know, I just use that either for my daily expenses or to put in my savings or whatnot. So that's the way that I approach my bankroll. Started with a 5K and now up to about 35K replenishable. So that gives me a lot of flexibility.
So when you started with 5K, what was your top bet? And now what top bet do you play with currently?
Sure. So I was willing to go up to 2x100 with my initial bankroll. And I understand that is a high risk of ruin, but I was aware of it. And again, that's another thing that I would tell players that are starting out. If you do have a lower bankroll and you are betting, make sure that the top bet that you're betting, that you're comfortable with that risk of ruin. In my case, again, replenishable, I was totally okay with it. So that was my initial top bet, 2x100. Now my top bet is 2x300, and it's been like that for the last 2 years, two and a half years, just about.
So, did you ever have a streak of losing several 5K bankrolls in a row, so you got stuck 20 or 30,000?
Yes, and that happened in, what was it, 2016, I believe. In 2016, I had a losing year, which is about, for my play, is about 200 hours. So for that year, I do break my my records into years just for the sake of keeping track of them. And in 2016, I actually got stuck for about 20,000 in the hole. So that was a pretty rough patch there. But thankfully, I was able to come out of that. So in the 7 years or so that I've played, I've had that one time when I had a losing year. And then the next worst after that is a year that I was pretty much break even. All the other years have been winning years, thankfully.
We briefly mentioned earlier that sometimes you played south of the border. I suspect sometimes that could be dangerous. Have you had any problems playing south of the border?
Yeah, so I often joke that there's money to be made at some places south of the border, except that some of those cities are literally ranked as the most dangerous cities in the world, right? So
little problem.
Yeah, so you're going into the lion's den, so to speak. But yeah, I've never had any issues personally, but I've been near areas where I could tell that it's very dangerous, especially when somebody notices you and they realize that even though you blend in, that you are actually not a local, and especially that you're an American. I think that's when things could get a little bit fishy, where in this countries, there is a lot of organized crime. In other words, yeah, sure, there's petty crime, but there's people out there looking for someone who perhaps has money, and then it is not uncommon for people to get abducted, you know, and then they'll ask for money or they'll rob you. So it's just something that I've always very cautious about, situational awareness wherever you're at. And if you win a large amount of money, to see if you are being watched, or maybe even the casino employees have been known to let somebody know that such and such a person just won a big amount of money. So yeah, it could be dangerous. So it's just a matter of being cautious and not being too trusting.
When you go, let's say you go to Tijuana, would you buy local clothes down there before you went into a casino, or would you wear just what you would normally wear in the United States?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I've actually looked into this to see what, you know, experts on security or people who would study these types of survival topics tell you. And basically what I've found is try to wear something that is not like a name brand that is expensive. Try to go for plain clothes. If you are okay and familiar with wearing, you know, the jersey of the team where you're going, in this case in Tijuana, it would be the soccer team, Los Cholos. If you're going to wear one of their jerseys, or let's say one of the Mexico national soccer team jersey, you better be aware of who the player is that you're wearing. You better know the score of the last match. You better know where they're at in the league, because if it does come up, and often it does, and you don't know what you're talking about, again, that's a dead giveaway. So all that to say, I go for plain clothes. Just try to be as bland as possible, as generic as possible.
So what is the story on the casinos in Mexico? I mean, are they technically illegal, and how many of them are there?
No, they're actually not illegal. They run in chains. So there's several chains. One of the biggest one being Caliente Casino. They have a bunch of branches almost at every major city. So they're not illegal. The thing with casinos in Mexico is that they do charge you a particular tax when you cash out if you have a winning. So if you are playing there, you got to take that into account so that even with the tax that they put on you, that you are still playing a winning game.
How much is the tax?
It varies, but I think the average would be about 7% on winnings.
So if I go into the casino today and I lose $1,000 and then I go back tomorrow and I win $1,000, do I get charged for the 7%?
Yes, but there might be a couple of ways around that. If you talk to a casino tables manager or if they assign a host to you, there's ways that you can wiggle your way through that, or you could show them your loss and you can see if they have any promotions going, or if they have any giveaways such as gift cards or credit card gift cards. So yeah, but if you don't ask for nothing, they're never going to offer it to you. So
right. Yeah. All right. Well, that's true in any casino, I guess.
Yep.
Because that sounds like hard to overcome, 7%. They must be giving away enough to make it worthwhile, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say there's games to be exploited. That's as much as I'll say, but yeah.
And do you think Americans, non-Hispanic Americans, would have a more difficult time playing in Mexico?
I wouldn't say that's necessarily the case. I mean, one of my good buddies plays in Mexico more than I do. You guys have interviewed him before, so put that together. But yeah, it's not necessarily more difficult, but you know, you have to know how to get around the barriers that they will put you. For instance, the first time that I won a significant amount of money at a Mexican casino, it seems that it's a hassle to cash out because you always have to play rated. That's the one thing that that they don't allow people to play unrated. And they know exactly how much you buy in. They know how much exactly you're going to cash out because otherwise you're not registered in their system. So the first time that I won, I would say a significant amount of money, they were taking a while to cash me out. And then one of the managers comes to me and says, "Hey, would you mind if we give you a check?" And I was like, "What do you mean a check?" He's like, "Yeah, a check, and you can, you know, go cash it here locally." I'm like, "No, I need the cash." Right. So it seems that sometimes they would put this, hurdles in front of you, to see if they could get away with paying you in a way that is not so favorable for the player. So as long as you're okay, you know, politely, you know, pushing back at them and saying, "No, you know what? I want to be cashed out now. And I want cash, not a check," I think you would be okay. The only thing I would say, once you're out of the casino, if somebody has noticed you and somebody does know you have a lot of money, that's a different story, right? But in the casino itself, I don't really see that as too much of an issue.
So, for example, like in Japan, they won't even let Caucasians into the casinos. The casinos are illegal. They're underground. But even though, you know, I had friends in Tokyo, you know, Japanese friends, and I asked them to take me as their guest, and they were like, "No, we can't." So it just depends on the country, right? Like,
yeah. So in Mexico, they're not illegal. In Colombia, they're not illegal, and in Chile, they're not illegal. That's the three countries in which I've had some experience playing.
Now, I know several people who've been robbed in Colombia. BJ Traveler was on the show years ago. I think he was robbed by the police. Yep. Yeah, that's a place too that can be quite dicey.
Yeah, I guess I have a couple of stories from Colombia. If you want to, I could share them real quick. And in regards one to the authorities there, and another one about running out of money at, you know, the early hours of the morning. So I'll tell you that one first. I was playing a game that was pretty good game, right? And it seems that sometimes when you're playing the game that has an edge off the top, you start off by losing, right? I don't know why that's the case, but it's happened several times. In any case, I ran out of money. I ran out of local currency right around 3 a.m. And I try to see if there's a way to exchange currency. And that's a very small casino, so they don't have any currency exchange. I look outside and the places that would, they're closed. So I tell the pit boss if there's anything they can do. He's like, hold on. So he makes a call. And then this guy comes out of the poker room. And I'm like, uh-oh, like, am I going to get robbed or what's going to go on here? And he comes up to me and says, hey, are you the person who needs to exchange dollars? And I say, yes. He says, come with me. So I'm like, okay. So I go to a back room with him that's sort of behind the cage. And he tells somebody to bring some chips. And he asked me how much I want. I told him how much I wanted. And then he's like, okay, give me the money and they'll give you the chips. So I'm kind of eyeing out the situation to see if I'm going to receive the chips. And sure enough, you know, the attendant gave me the chips. I give him the money. And then we kind of go on our way, right? But it's one of those things where once you're deep enough into that situation, you realize, like, there's a point of no return. Like, if this guy takes out a gun and tells me to give him the money, I'm going to have to, right? It's either right. That or something else is going to happen. But, yeah, thankfully, I got out of that one okay. But it seemed a little bit fishy to be taken into a back room. And thankfully, that casino didn't really give me any heat as far as playing the game I was playing. And that's the other thing. If I have the foreign currency with me already and I buy in and I play the game, I can pretty much go unnoticed, at least to the immediate players and the pit or the personnel that is working there. But the moment I need to do a transaction or I need to exchange more dollars, now they know that I'm not a local. Now they know that I'm an American, right? So that's when the heat can potentially start. So that's the one story there. The other one, a little bit more interesting in the sense that I had flown into.
Hang Colombia. On, let's stay on the first story. I want to hear your second story, but let's stay on the first one. Did you get a good rate? In other words, they can exchange rates can vary all over the place. When they did it in the casino, did you get what you considered a fair rate, or was, I mean, presumably this guy had to get his cut too?
Yeah. So I think that this guy gave me a good rate because he wants to have dollars. So if the dollars go directly to him, he's really not losing much. And he actually did not take advantage of me in the rate. I mean, it was, you know, I lost maybe $15 or $17 if I would have done it at the exchange place, but it wasn't that bad. So I would say if he wanted to, he would have taken more advantage, but I considered, given the situation, I think he was pretty fair.
Good. All right. Let's go on. So you have another story from Colombia that I so rudely cut you off on.
No, you're good. You're good. So yeah, this one had to do with flying into Colombia from Chile, because I went to Chile first. And the thing that you'll discover when flying to these countries is that when you're trying to exchange the currency back to dollars, it could be a hassle, right? So many times you just have to come back home with foreign currency. And I don't have an issue with that. That's fine. But I do try to exchange as much as possible if it's not too much of a hassle. So that time I flying from Chile to Colombia for a couple of days. And when I get to Colombia, I play there some games there. And then when I'm getting ready to leave, the airline is not letting me do online checking. So I go to the airport, to El Dorado Airport there in Bogota. And the lady at the counter, she tells me that, the reason I couldn't check in online is because I've been selected for a random enhanced check before boarding. So I'm like,
congratulations.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, I mean, how could this be random, right? So I asked her, I said, hey, if you would be kind to let me know, do you know what triggers this investigation or this random search? And she kind of considers, you kind of tell she's considering whether to tell me or not. And she says, well, the record shows that you've been in and out of Colombia for very brief periods of time. So that triggers a flag in our system. So I'm like, okay, well, that kind of makes sense. So for those that may not be aware, Colombia is known for trafficking, right? Trafficking illegal substances, money, right? So I'm like, okay, I guess that made sense.
Not money, drugs.
Correct, yes. But I'm thinking, okay, well, I have nothing to hide. I have records of the casinos I've been to, either by pictures or by receipt, because sometimes they'll charge you like a couple of bucks to go into a casino, which no big deal, fine. But I'm thinking, depending on how the search goes, I could pretty much be at the mercy of the officer that is, running this search on me. So as I'm waiting there, you know, they told me they'll call my name about 30 minutes before the airplane takes off once I'm in the boarding gate. So I'm sitting there, and just for kicks, I start doing searches on Google about enhanced searches at El Dorado Airport. And I just start reading horror stories, right? So I'm like, oh boy, what's going to happen now? So I'm trying to think in my mind, like, should I lie? What's going to happen if they ask me where this money come from? I have proof, but again, you're at the mercy of these officers, right? In a room with no cameras, and probably showing them money that it's maybe their yearly salary, very possible, right? So what ended up happening, they call me, and by this time I had actually bought a couple of things at the gift shop. So I go in there with my carry-on and my laptop bag, my backpack and whatnot. And it was a lady that was assigned to me to search me. So she's like, okay, take off your shoes, take off your coat, put your carry-ons over here, et cetera, et cetera. And then immediately she's fixated on a bag that's holding some coffee packages that I bought for my wife, because my wife loves Colombian coffee. And she's like, do you have the receipt for this coffee? And I said, I think I do. Hold on. Let me check. So I start looking for the receipts, and for the life of me, I cannot find those receipts. So she seems to be very adamant about wanting those and needing those receipts. In the meantime, she kind of starts checking my carry-on, my backpack. Now the money that I had, I had it strapped to my coat. So on my coat, and my coat had already been put on the table where she was looking at those things. And then she turns, after she looked at my luggage, now she looks to the coffee again, and she asked me, do you have the receipt? And I told her, no, you know, I can't find it. I go, but I do, I pay with it with credit. So I think I can find the transaction real quick on my phone and show you from my account, from my credit account, that I bought this coffee just now. And she kind of has a straight face. I can't tell whether she would consent to me doing that or not, but she doesn't say no. So I kind of gently start looking and try to hurry up looking up this transaction, and I do find it. And by this time, she's already looked through my shoes and looked through other stuff, but she hasn't touched my coat yet. And she says, okay. She goes, I don't know what I'm going to do with this coffee, because you're telling me it's coffee, but I don't know it's coffee. This could have been filled with other substances that I don't know about. And I go, oh, I'm so sorry, officer. Look, if you want, I'll open it for you. You can take a look. And then she becomes very agitated. And then she gets the coffee and she throws it along with my luggage. And then she hands me my coat and kind of abruptly throws it at me, and she says, whenever you buy something, make sure that you have your receipts. Never let that happen again. Get out of here. So I'm like, thank you very much, officer. I really appreciate you giving me a warning, and I'll make sure I have the receipts I need next time. So she never got to checking where I had the money. So saved by the bell, because she was so fixated on me not having receipts for coffee. And otherwise, she would have found the Chilean currency, obviously some of the Colombian currency dollars and a few Mexican pesos that I had. Now it could have been nothing, but you know, experience tells me that, if they will likely suspect of something, they will. And it would be hard to believe that I went to casinos and I made this money there. And this is totally legit. Even if that were the case, they might still want to cut, right? So right. That would have been complicated. And I'm glad it didn't have to come to that.
You know, it's really important when we're talking about this to people have to if you're going to go play in a foreign country, make sure you understand what the currency restrictions are in that country, whether you need to declare money going into the country, whether you need to declare money going out of the country, because more than one player has had their money confiscated for, you know, not declaring yep. something when they were supposed to. And in Egypt was notorious for decades where the casino would call the customs people and tell them that a player was coming through with a bunch of money, and they wouldn't tell you that you had to declare it. And in one case, the players actually asked for a receipt for the money, and the casino people told them, oh, you don't need that. And then when they got to immigration, the money was confiscated by the
– Yeah, they were basically set up to get busted.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But now yep. you're kind of in double jeopardy coming from Colombia, because even if the Colombian people don't steal it, they easily could steal it from you when you get back to America, right? The DEA can be waiting for you and say you're yep. bringing all this money from Colombia – although, I mean, usually the money is going to Colombia and the drugs are coming from Colombia. But, you know, you still have that problem. But you never had any problem. I'm assuming you declared the money coming in and you had no problem with that?
Yeah. So if I have over $10,000, I always declare. So that's not an issue. It just comes down to that human factor, right? I mean, the moment it's just you and that officer – I mean, as far as I'm concerned, anything goes, because then what are you going to say? Well, this officer was unfair to me, or who are you going to report that officer to? Right. Especially in a country down south. Right.
Yeah.
Now, this was a small amount of coffee, I presume, and you were quite willing to let her keep the coffee if that would have made her happy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, my thought was just, don't search my coat. Don't search my coat. I don't care about the coffee. Yeah. And so, then, I guess that goes to say too, as an AP, right, is if they don't ask you for something, don't volunteer the info. I could have easily started off by, hey, officer, look, I have this money. Like, please don't think anything bad of it. And basically my approach is, unless you ask me, unless you find it, I'm not going to tell you anything, right? I think that's a good rule of thumb to have.
You mentioned you sometimes played in Chile, which when I was in school, we called Chile, but I assume yours have the Latino pronunciation. So do you have any stories about Chile?
Yeah, there was a time I was playing there, and I noticed that there was an opportunity at a slot machine, because I do some slots as well. And the way to get to that slot machine, it was in the high limit room, but you need a specific tier number or tier level in a player's cards together, which I didn't have. But again, you know, this is I believe that especially in these countries, there's always a way around the so-called rules, right? So I was able to find my way into the high limit room because I had eyed a machine. And I was able to, you know, to get the price I was looking for from the machine. And, you know, I hit a jackpot, and now I'm waiting for a hand pay. And I'm thinking, okay, well, this is good. I got what I wanted, but I should have thought a little bit more ahead on what's the contingency plan if there's any issues with them paying me. But thankfully, you know, to their credit, in Chile, when I've gotten a large payout, they have never given me any hassle as far as paying me. Sure, they take a little bit to do some paperwork and whatnot. But the interesting thing is, now that they know you're an American, because you need to do the paperwork to get paid, Now they have a way of knowing who you are. And again, this comes into the danger of if it's a amount of money that somebody would be interested in that is into organized crime, now you become a target, right? So I waited a while, and then there comes this attendant with a tray with stacks of cash, right? So I'm thinking, oh boy. So as I get paid, you know, they tell me congratulations, and they have me sign the paperwork. They take my information, and I asked them, hey, do I need a receipt for this money if I'm ever stopped? And they said, no, you actually don't need a receipt. Your receipt that you came into the casino would suffice, because that's a place that they'll charge you a few dollars to go in, or a few Chilean pesos, whatever it may be. But the interesting thing here is that I realized that by that time, the amount that I have on me is probably a significant portion of the yearly salary of one of those employees, right? And again, the human nature, the human factor portion of this kind of plays in. Is it, if I think I'm being watched, or if there's any danger, is it wise to just get out of there then, or to stay there? So my intuition told me it's probably time to get out of there. And I did. So I had a security guard walk me to the car, and I went back to my hotel. But just something to be mindful of, you know. In the U.S., if we win a jackpot or whatnot, you're probably going to be okay. I mean, depending on the area. But in one of these countries, you know, that type of money can be a huge temptation to somebody that would do harm in order to take that from you, especially if they now know that you're an American. So, yeah, that was an interesting experience I had there. But to their credit, the transaction was actually smooth. And interestingly enough, they take no taxes from that winning. So I was pleased with that.
You know, when I played in Russia, you know how we never want the casino to know anything about us, right? And yep. When I played in Russia, I was at a casino, and the casino manager, he came to me with these two giant guys that were armed, and said, "Look, these guys will drive you home to your hotel."
Oh, nice.
And I was like, "No, no, 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 no!" You know. And he's like, "Trust me, you do not want to leave here on your own. These guys will take you to your hotel." And so I let them. And after that, actually, every casino would make that offer. Like, we will have armed guards take you back to your hotel. And, you know, that's when I realized I'm crazy to be playing in this freaking country.
Yeah.
But,
guy hits you. Yep.
All right. So since Richard is crazy, we're going to have a few commercials. We'll be right back talking to Hit A7. This point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The promotion in August is half price Walmart cards. Earn and redeem $25 worth of slot club points, which is $8,333. And you'll redeem those and you'll get $50 Walmart card. The points must be earned and redeemed in August. You may not use pre-existing points. There's a limit of 10 cards for the month. At predictit.org, it's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. Active markets now relates to who's going to win the elections. You can bet on the governor or the senator or the representatives in most of the state, along with the presidential one, of course. Our listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predictit.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful at counting cards at blackjack. They have videos they post online all the time. They have more videos behind the paywall. So you can look at the YouTube channel and see if Colin Jones has a style that you find useful to you, I find I could very easily learn from Colin Jones. So if you can learn from him, and if blackjack is something you want to get good at, that is an excellent site to do it at. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Wheel Poker Deluxe. This is a game where you pay an extra 5 coins per game, meaning triple play costs 20 coins, 5 play costs 30 coins, 10 play costs 55. And the bonuses come on dealt trips, full houses, and quads. Slightly different deal for Deuces Wild Variation. If you get one of these bonuses, you spin the wheel. When the wheel spins, it lands on a drawing opportunity. Sometimes it's 100 play, 4 to a flush. Sometimes it's 10 play with a pair of aces. Sometimes it's triple play, 4 to the royal, etc. There is no skill at all involved in the hold for the bonus, and the bonus is earned on the draw, meaning that if you know the strategy to the base game, you know the strategy for the Wheel Poker Deluxe version, which adds a bit of EV with a bit of variance. Surprisingly, the triple play version pays a bit more than the five play version. For example, a 9-6 double-double, the base game pays 98.98, the five play version pays 99.31, and the triple play version pays 99.47. All right, we are back with Hit Ace 7. We're going to move on from your Latin American exploits. One of the things that you, one of your real world gigs is that you are a musician. How does being a musician fit in with being an AP?
Yeah, sure. That's a something that's brought me some advantage. So I've toured with some bands and very diverse music styles, which requires me to wear a certain attire. So I've played with bands that play rock, ska, reggae, so more of a rocker look. And then I've played also with very traditional Mexican bands in which I'll wear a cowboy hat and boots and Levi jeans and that sort of stuff. So when I have gone on the road playing with these bands, and there are casinos around, I will go after the gig and play blackjack in the attire in which I played the gig. So that kind of serves as conversation if somebody asks what I'm doing there. And then when I'm wearing the Mexican cowboy attire, I'm basically speaking only Spanish. So then that role comes back. And I've gotten a lot of good time, as far as hours played, with that particular, costume, if you will. So I think somehow, I don't know why, but in the mind of the floor or the pit or maybe even surveillance, if somebody doesn't have the typical look they're looking for, it takes them a little bit longer to realize that somebody is counting cards, right? So I've definitely taken advantage of that.
Have you had any bad back-offs or back-roomings, any bad experiences from that?
Yeah, one comes to mind. I was not back-roomed, but it was an instance in a tribal casino in Southern California in the Temecula area. Those that know the area will probably nail down which one it is.
Yeah, because there's only one casino in Temecula.
There you go.
And it's a big one.
Well, but there are a bunch of others that are, you know, 11 miles right. away.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyways, you know, to their credit, I was an offender there a couple times before that. And they actually didn't back room me, but as I was walking out with the chips in my pocket, they tried to put sort of a wall of four people to direct me to turn into a certain alleyway of one of the halls so that I could go into a back room. Thankfully, I was able to to walk the other way and get away from that. But that property also showed me the hard way that they have license plate readers. So from there on, I've known to research and to ask and network to find out which other places will have plate readers, and then avoid parking on site, or there's other creative ways to have them not read your plates when you approach the area.
So, like what? You want to? I mean, I have heard there's like
license
a spray.
Plate covers.
License plate covers?
Yeah. I mean, I tend to be very practical. So, homemade license plate covers stop a block before I get into the casino, put them on, go in there, get out, stop again a block away from there, remove them. That's the easiest way that I've found.
Yeah, I mean, because some of those places in Southern California, it's hard to not park on property.
Yep.
And I mean, unless you want to park, down the street somewhere and Uber in or whatever. But
Yeah. License plate covers, license plate. I forget what they call those, foggers or whatever, where you can turn them off. So yeah, there's a couple of options like that. If you Google options for switching or hiding your license plates.
Now, by license plate cover, do you mean like a piece of cloth or something that blocks your entire license plate, which I would think would be a really big flat red flag to the casino?
Yeah. So think along the lines of when you buy a new car, how it comes with the license plates from the dealer.
Yes.
Where it'll say the name of the dealership. That's sort of my approach.
And so there'll be a piece of paper in there that says you might have to get your license within so many days, and then.
Yeah, but I mean, if somebody in the casino took interest in my license plates, I mean, they're just going to see that this person probably purchased this car not too long ago and they don't have plates yet, right?
Uh-huh. Okay, good. But Uber is pretty cheap for a mile away. And good. You have another career, and it gives you something in common with Colin Jones, and that you are a man of the cloth. Now, how does that work with being an AP?
So in one of the exchanges we had, I told you that I'm an ordained minister. I'm an ordained Christian minister. So that just throws an extra interesting aspect, right, to Advantage Play. I think it's really important for me to always keep that as my priority, right? God, family, my responsibilities at home. And I've really had no issues with anybody accusing me of doing wrong or whatnot. But I do think that there's a certain amount of discernment to be exercised. For instance, if I know that somebody has issues with gambling, the first thing I'm going to tell them is not going to be, hey, guess what? Well, I kind of gamble on the side. You want to come along with me, right? So I kind of just disclose it on a case-by-case basis or on a need-to-know basis, just to be a little bit discerning and wise on how I utilize that information with people.
Very good. We're actually going to cut you off now, but we have lots more questions for you. Is there any chance we can talk you to coming back for a return visit in the near future?
Absolutely. It would be an honor.
That is the correct answer. Thank you. You win the prize. Now, at the end of our shows, normally we have a recommended section. So, Richard, do you have anything to recommend to our guests today?
Sure. The latest thing I've been binging on Netflix is a show that's it's Japanese and British. It's called Giri Haji, which is duty, shame, in Japanese. It takes place both in Japan and in London. So I've been enjoying that. I would also just – I've recommended this many times in the past, but I would also just say the Blackjack Discord, you know, there has been a lot going on the Discord recently. People jump into voice chat, and there have been several nights in the last couple of weeks where there are 25 or 30 people in the voice chat. So, you know, I would – anybody who's interested in Blackjack, I would definitely recommend that to them.
Do you participate in those chats some, Richard?
I have some, yeah.
I suspect your voice is the best known of the group given this program. So that would make you a celebrity there.
Well, you know, James Grossjean is also often in the chat, which I think is what draws people to it more than me. But
He would be a celebrity too.
Interestingly, he never talks. So he, when people ask him things, he responds by typing, you know, because he doesn't want his voice recognized. So, yeah. Anyway, as I say, if you're interested in Blackjack, that's I would highly recommend it. I have not seen you in there hit A7.
Yeah, I haven't been in there. I'm gonna hit up our friend that runs it so that I can join in there.
All right. Hit A7, do you have something to recommend to our audience?
Sure. So real quick, another aspect that I enjoy very much is good food. And when I visit Vegas, I'm often bummed out because one of my favorite places is always such a long wait, and that's the Oyster Bar at Palace Station. So I found that a good alternative to the Oyster Bar is the Oyster Bar at Harris. And their dishes are not exactly the same, but they're very good. So if somebody's craving Oyster Bar at Palace Station and you don't want to wait in line for 3 hours, go check out the Harris Oyster Bar.
Or you can, if you take a drive out to Sunset Station, they have an Oyster Bar there too that is very good.
Oh, okay. So I haven't tried that.
Yeah.
It's always risky asking about our a sponsor without knowing what the right idea, right, what the answer is going to be is, have you tried the Oyster Bar at South Point?
I have not, actually.
So it is currently closed for remodeling, but it's expected to open soon. And I personally enjoy that one a lot. I have not eaten in the others you mentioned for years. Okay. I used to play at Palace Station, but I haven't not really welcome to play there anymore. Very good. So thank you, Hit Ace 7. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.